Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for January the 20th, 2023. This is episode number 146. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Winnebago debuting a new camper van prototype. Volvo XC40 and C40 are going rear-wheel drive and getting faster charging. And Jeep Avenger is named European Car of the Year. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the unimpeachable Mr. Todd Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the meritorious Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. More about that in a minute. Welcome, everybody. So let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and get to some news. So Kyle, good morning.
Good morning to you.
How you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Awesome. Awesome. So judging from the videos flowing out of the Out of Spec channels this week, you've had a pretty good one. So for instance, I see you get your hands on the Mercedes AMG EQS and put it to the Hogback Challenge, which is the Out of Spec testing arena for evaluating driver's assistance programs. I didn't watch this whole video. I think it's like an hour long. So I have to believe you went into like some amount of detail there. But a couple of things. Did you change your mind about preferring the 450 plus EQS over the AMG? And how did Mercedes Drive Pilot assistance system do on the Hogback this time?
Yeah, I still think the 450 is the way to go. And, just go super luxury for this car. It's not meant to be a performance car. But I will say that the AMG guys did breathe a little bit of life into the car, which is nice. But it's just so expensive. The one that I was driving was $160,000. And for $115,000, at least with no options, you can have a Model S Plaid that has almost twice the horsepower. Getting out of my Model S and into the AMG, I was like, wow, this thing can't get out of its own way. So I was like, you know what? If it's not going to be fast, at least get the comfort one. And that's my recommendation. That's the way to go. But what a nice car it is, EQS. I love the integration of the infotainment system. Has great route planning, plug-in charge, battery preconditioning on the way to the charger. They get all the stuff right. And, just a great cruiser. From a driver assistance standpoint, amazing performance. It actually has the highest score we've ever tested in the Hogback Challenge. And a lot of that's just due to because we award certain points up front for having certain features like a capacitive steering wheel and eye tracking and things like this. And it has all that. But it also did really well during the test, way better than the last Mercedes we tested. So a massive improvement and tops the leaderboard for the Hogback at the moment.
Wow.
Nice. And that's the Mercedes Drive Pilot. So that's different. Somebody was mentioning, News Column mentions that Mercedes is filing for level 3 autonomy, which they've done that in California. And was it Nevada, the other state? There's another state. We talked about this last week.
I was not paying attention.
Neither was I, apparently. So there you go. Right. So you also had, at the beginning of that video, you also mentioned that you're launching another channel maybe or something. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, already launched. Out of Spec Reviews is really for the nerds. We get into evaluating driver assistance systems, charging stations, talking about cable limitations, charger successes and failures. And that's not really that helpful to the mass audience, or at least to those getting into the electric world. That's where I want to stay. I like to push it forwards. But one of my colleagues, Max, once wanted to make a channel about, sort of the basics, the entry to EV, if you will, talking about tax credits, which cars to buy. That's exactly what Out of Spec Guide is doing. And so you'll find those channels. It's daily uploads. And yeah, it's already rocking along pretty well.
What's it called?
It's called Out of Spec Guide.
Guide. Okay. Awesome. So let's see. Let me go back to here. So, all right. Hyundai has updated its IONIQ 5s up there in the wild so that they can now precondition for faster cold weather DC fast charging. So I understand it's greatly improved, but still also not that great. So you had a video about Hyundai doing adding the preconditioning for cold weather DC fast charging. So how did that go?
Yeah, so Hyundai, and well, first of all, there's the new EGMP cars, at least Genesis GV60, like my mom's car, or a brand new IONIQ 5, come with battery preconditioning loaded into the software. If you happen to have an earlier model of the car that didn't have it, you need to go for a software update, which sounds like I'm talking about a car from 30 years ago. You got to go somewhere to get a software update. What century are we living in? That's just ridiculous that it doesn't get over the air updates. Truly ridiculous. And so, you know, my friend Zach owns this car and he's like, yeah, I had to schedule an appointment, wait 2 weeks to get in, go to the Hyundai dealer, sit and drink their garbage coffee. And then they loaded this software into my car. And he's like, I didn't really notice a difference, but he's like, when I used eco mode, the car had no performance anymore. And so it's basically made eco mode undrivable. It's so slow and not responsive. Okay. So
super that's chill mode.
Yeah, it's just not even like, it's actually dangerous. So don't, you can't use eco mode in the car anymore. But if you can figure out the right combinations of settings to get the navigation system in, which isn't actually that easy because there's no in-car route planner, there's no great searching for stations because there's no way to select DC chargers. It just shows you what's nearby. And if you have a lot of chargers nearby, it'll only show you chargers like in the 1 mile or 2 mile radius of your house or wherever right. you are. Pretty crazy.
That's helpful.
Yeah. You got to like type in Electrify America, Loveland, Colorado, and then it pops up. But when Jeez. You get everything set in the correct configuration, magic happens. It warms the battery relatively quickly, silently, uses about 5-ish kilowatts to do it. And you know what's crazy is I drove it like such a grandma over to the charging station, arrived with pretty high state of charge, which our viewers will know, the higher the state of charge you have, the warmer the battery actually needs to be to reach peak speeds. And what was funny is there was an IONIQ 5 charging there getting 44 kilowatts at relatively low state of charge. My friend had his EV6 there who had done pretty much the same thing I did, drove the car 50 miles, something like that. He was getting 70 kilowatts at very low state of charge. I plugged the IONIQ 5 in around 50% and got 200. So Ooh. Major difference here. We're talking saving 30 plus minutes at a charging station.
Yeah, that's significant. Well, that's, I don't know, does that outweigh all the other things? So.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's worth the hassle if you own one of these cars to go through all of this, especially if you live in a cold climate like we do. What was crazy was Zach was driving this car on a road trip. He took it to Texas and he went the long way, went through Kansas. I don't know why, but normally it's a 20-hour road trip roughly. And he said it basically extended his trip anywhere between 8 and 12 hours just due to cold battery charging slower because he could not get it above 40 kilowatts, 45 kilowatts. He's like, yes. He's lucky if he saw 70 or 80. And I'm like, whoa, not good. So now that problem would at least be, in theory, solved.
You always want more. Whatever you've got, if you're road tripping, you always want more. And it's fine if you're not in a hurry or if you're not road tripping, but if you are facing a big old journey ahead of you, if there's a way to get better speed and you know the right chargers that you're going to hop along and that they're working, et cetera, it's like range. You just always want more speed. And then when the car is not doing the speeds that you know it can, that's also really frustrating as well. And particularly with these cars, because they are 800 volts for not a lot of money. And given so many of our chargers out there are not able to deliver the promised speed on 400 volt cars, then it's even more important that these ones are the ones that get fixed. But I totally agree with you on Hyundai and Kia's in route planning for such a big company, and with such big ambitions in EV world. I'm still shocked how these big car companies get it so wrong. Like, I know that's the cliche about Tesla's a Silicon Valley company and the best engineers want to work for tech companies and the whole carrier problem with VW, but it still kind of blows my mind. Like, these companies aren't short of money, and yet how I think because I've been doing a lot of miles recently in my Kona, and I just had the screen open, which is like pointing to me to the nearest charger. And it was just completely indiscriminate about what it was picking, whether it was a 3 kilowatt or a 7 kilowatt post or a 350 kilowatt post. It was literally like, here's the nearest charger that we've got on the mapping that we bought in 2 years ago or something. And it was like, oh man, that was, so that's, I think you put a tweet out this week as well about your three things that, I forget what the phrasing was, Kyle, but like one of them was route mapping. And it's like, man, the car companies need to sort this really urgently to be as good as Tesla.
What's crazy to me is Porsche has some of the best route planning in the business. I mean, it really knows to get you to the highest power station, to the highway at the lowest state of charge. You can set your target arrival state of charge. It warms the battery up to different temperatures on the way, depending on if it's a 150 kilowatt unit, won't get it as hot. If it's a 350, it's going to warm it up a bit more for efficiency, like really good route planning. But then you get into an ID4 and it sucks. But I'm like, that's one company. It's Volkswagen Group. Just take the software from your brothers and throw it in this car. It makes no sense to me. And it really makes no sense to me that Hyundai and Kia, you know, really making some of the best electric cars on the planet from a hardware perspective, can't get a software over the air updates. You know, right, we're 10 years later after that. I don't know what's going on there. And also, you know, just launching preconditioning. Like, what's going on here? I don't know.
Kyle, right. how what's the process of initiating the preconditioning? Like, let's say I don't know anything about EVs and, you know, I got this new fancy car. How easy is it going to be for me to use the preconditioning on a road trip?
Well, you wouldn't ever use it. If you didn't know about cars, you wouldn't even know this exists because you have to go 17 menus deep to activate battery preconditioning, which you wouldn't do in the first place because you wouldn't know what that is.
Yeah. So to me, that invalidates everything you've said about how good the system works.
No, I've said the system is bad.
It's freaking useless. If it's not, we can't even get people to understand how to plug in their cars and how what station is appropriate for an 800 volt, a 400 volt, and so forth and so on. If it's 17 layers deep into the settings, you know, maybe, you know, this is just the first step and you know, Hyundai is going to improve it and have it automatic. Like, you know, we talked about how Porsche does. Well, don't just say no. Let's hold out hope. I'll be I'll play Dom for a little bit. I'll be the eternal optimist here. Maybe this is just the first step, but if it is as you say, you know, you 17 layers deep, you have to understand how to turn it on, then it's for the 1% of the 1% to charge faster, which is
just useless. Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It needs to just happen. Sucks.
Right. Of course. And because, you know, most people won't use the in-car navigation because the search sucks and the routing sucks. You know, they're going to use CarPlay. There's no way to activate preconditioning if you're using anything other than the native software, which isn't really unique to Hyundai. That's actually the case for almost every car. But I really want to see some back-end integration there. You know, that's a lot of protocols with Apple not getting the data from the cars, of course, and the cars not getting the data from Apple. But Tom, you're absolutely right. It's just not that relevant unless you're a super nerd. Now, thankfully, a larger percentage of Ioniq 5 owners are super nerds compared with Tesla owners right now. But that will change as time goes on.
Right.
Yeah, I was charging last night at a supermarket here where they have 7s, 22s, and a 50. And it was late. It was like 11 p.m. last night. Family were in bed. I went out to get some supplies from the supermarket. And plugged in opposite a lady who had just bought that day a Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid. And she'd had a Toyota before. She told me it was a self-charging hybrid. I smiled. I was like, oh, how did that work out for you? She was like, yeah, fine, but you can't charge it. I'm like, no kidding, Sherlock. Anyway, and so she'd bought her Mitsubishi yesterday, but had been given, and I didn't ask dealer or private, but had no knowledge of how to charge it. Now, listen, I try and remember all the time that was me at one day, because my EV News Daily podcast was 5 years old 2 days ago. And I started the podcast even before we owned our first full-time EV. And I remember that feeling of starting to learn about electric cars. And there's like three plugs. And CHAdeMO, what? CCS? Like, what? What's AC? So I try to remember there's like a day one for everybody. But she had been told absolutely nothing. She was trying to plug into the 50 kilowatt charger. And then she settled on the 22 and charged on AC. And I was just talking to her about the the general things about charging, but like I'm happy to help.
Dealers really need it.
A reminder that we, and I'm guessing much of the viewership and listenership of this podcast, unless you're watching this for the first time, you're EV curious. Hello, welcome along. We'll teach you about EVs. For most people, you know, in this area, we're a little more knowledgeable than some people, and that there's a first time for everything. It absolutely killed. So you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. If that isn't obvious, if there's not a big button that says preheat, like in some EVs, where, and you know, and explaining what that is, it's next to useless. And it's frustrating.
Right. Well, okay.
And one more add thing. There should be pop-ups where the vehicle tells you what it's doing and why it's doing it, just to help teach people. I love that, and Kyle could tell you about this, that the Rivian tells us when we're DC fast charging, if the charging rate has been slowed down because the charging station won't deliver what the car is requesting, or if the car has throttled the charging rate because it needs to cool the batteries off. And those little cues like that might be, you know, elementary for us here, and but for the average person, it's so helpful to teach them what's going on with your car there. When they look and say, why is it only pulling 30 kilowatts? It was pulling, you know, 180 a few minutes ago. And then they look down, it says, you know, charging speed slowed down for battery cooling. Oh, okay, the battery got too hot. Done. You know, like, just, that's not that hard to do. And, you know, the more manufacturers need to do that.
Yeah. All right. So Kyle, you published a great video on out-of-spec reviews comparing the powertrain control strategy of the Rivian R1T and the Land Rover Defender 130, which is not an electric car. The Land Rover is like gas combustion, gasoline. Yeah. Six inline six, I believe, in that one. And I thought it was a fun watch and very different vehicles, obviously, but do you want to give us an outline of the test and your thoughts?
Sure thing. Yeah. So drove, you know, I'm a Land Rover nerd, a different podcast, I understand, but you know, wanted to try out the new long Defender 130 because I think it looked a bit silly, but I thought, all right, let's give it a go. And we got dumped on with snow and I was like, great. Land Rover has some of the best combustion off-roading drivetrain tech, and Rivian has some of the best electric sort of adventure-y off-roady drivetrain tech. So let's do combustion versus electric in the snow. And you know what's interesting is just how different they were in the way that they performed and felt. You know, obviously the Land Rover gives you the sense, because it's, you know, gas powered, you really can go anywhere. You can throw some gas tanks on the side and it feels like, you know, it's built to conquer Africa, which it can do. The Rivian is like, okay, range becomes a big concern when we start getting up into the mountains and doing all the stuff we want to do. But it's so much more fun to drive the Rivian and so much more responsive that it's really kind of cool. But the four motor stuff does get a little bit weird. However, Rivian, through every software update I've noticed, has really been fine tuning their control logic for the entire life of the truck. It's just getting better and better, because I had a lot of issues with it early on, especially right. Hardcore off-roading. I think I still do. I haven't had my truck hardcore off-roading in the last maybe 8 to 12 weeks, something like that. There's been some updates. But you can get it stuck, basically, where locking diffs really would help. The Land Rover, thankfully, has all of that. So for real hardcore stuff, I still don't think there's matching the Defender. But for snow driving, the Rivian was so much more of a pleasant experience and fun, because you can change the character of the Rivian from a very competent, you know, stable driving experience in snow mode to throwing it in drift, rally, or sport. And you can hang the tail out and be a hooligan. And it's really this split character that you can't get from a combustion drivetrain typically.
Right. I noticed the Defender had some issues with the elevations as well, right? Because you're up, what mountain was that? It was a nice mountain, man. You had a nice view at the side there.
I don't think it's called anything. It's just right here in town.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it in town? Do you have a mountain like that size in town?
Yeah, just like, it's like 10 minutes from my house.
Damn. I've been 10 minutes like from your house.
I mean, that Colorado mountains are a lot bigger than that. It's like, okay. like a hill.
Okay.
Yeah, we're at 8,400 feet of elevation up there, something like that. But, you know, it's just any combustion engine that's turbocharged, especially when you're breathing, you know, ambient air, which is not very dense, right, is going to have some issues at elevation.
Right. And but less so, I mean, it did have a turbocharger on it, I believe you said.
Well, it's a mild hybrid turbo, so you know, you would think you'd have the a little electric boost to get you going,
right,
and
right,
you know, but it's got a pretty sizable turbo on there, and it also comes down to how they tuned the vehicle. Right. You know, you can drive a lot of other turbocharged engines at elevation; they feel a lot snappier than this does. And the point of this car isn't really to be a snappy sports car, but right, the point I was trying to get across is like, if you're in a slick patch and you need power now, it's nice to know, okay, you can put your foot down and get instant power with an electric drivetrain.
Nice. And they both made it up the hill, no problem with it. Yeah, it was a fun video to watch. I liked it. So I should mention too, if you do like enjoy watching like longer like road trip videos, Kyle and Alyssa have published a great one this week, and it's on the Out of Spec Motoring channel. So check that out if you're interested. I think it's to Las Vegas, right? In some pretty crazy weather, at least where I was watching.
Okay. I didn't know that video went up. That's great. So
well, there you go.
Our trip to Vegas is up, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. Nice. It looks like it had a lot of good positive comments too.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. It is that one. And it was a great road trip. And it was the first time in a while that we took a Tesla on a trip for a video, because we've been doing a lot of CCS stuff. And that's just true. Can't tell you how easy it was and how nice it is.
All right. I understand. And you're in your Model 3 Performance. So how was the new, because you changed all the suspension and tires on that. So how is that going, just while we're talking about it?
Oh, it's so comfortable. It's great. I mean, the car is really loud still. Nothing we did to change that. So it's not best cruiser. The range, not so good, as you noted when you had the car, Dominic.
Right.
So we were doing deeper charges and, you know, really stretching it. But just the network is so incredible. You know, you just back in, slap the plug in the car. You don't even look, and you just walk away. And just, you know, it was so refreshing.
Have you had any communication and update on the round steering wheel to replace your yoke? Because you put the order in, right?
Yeah. So I actually couldn't even order it. They have you put your email in to get added to the list, I guess. And haven't heard a thing, because the Model S that I have, I cannot wait to get a round wheel on that car, because I feel like I'm missing enjoyment from the yoke.
Yeah, I've seen you kind of hoon around a bit in some of your videos, and I still can't, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's fine. I've tried the yoke. It's okay. It's like, it's kind of like a 5 out of 10. Like, I don't really care. I think your muscle memory, but I think it's when you push it or want to have a little play that muscle, that's when you don't want to retrain. That millisecond is when you don't want to retrain. You go to grab a wheel if you're letting it spin through your hands or something. And I mean, I can't wait to see you with the round wheel on that car.
Oh, it's just going to be a
you dropped
I muted myself. We're going to take it to the track and do a full drifting day with it as soon as we can. And then, you know, I'm kind of really hoping the Taycan comes in sooner rather than later, because I know we're getting close to Taycan facelift at this point. Maybe we should just wait for it. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, there's something about the Model S that isn't totally driving with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I drive it the least. If the Model 3 and the Model S are parked next to each other, I'm jumping in the Model 3 every time.
What is that? Like a handling or performance or comfort or what?
Yeah, I think comfort and no. So I'm not sure if it's really related to the accident, because the car made these noises before it was sent hard into the curb. But every time I pull out of my driveway, it just sounds like it's ripping itself apart. The whole rear hatch creaks really loud, and I hate the seating position. The yoke doesn't help, but I feel like I'm sitting way too high in the car. And so like, I'm going to try and make all the adjustments that I feel like I need to make. I need the seat lower. I need the round wheel. But there is something that like, yeah, of course, if it was my only car, I'd love it and drive it everywhere. And I've taken it on trips and it's amazing, but I've only done 5,000 miles in like 8 months of ownership.
Yeah. But you like to sit freakishly low in all vehicles. If you had your way, you'd be like this on the steering wheel. Like,
peering over the top of the ground. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just doesn't, it's just not my thing. And then, you know, you get into a Taycan, and like, certainly the Tesla can do a lot of things the Taycan can't. The Taycan's way slower for the money, you know, and even for any money. But then you just sit down, you're like on the ground, you get this perfect wheel, you get wonderful chassis control. And I'm like, okay, that's what I want to drive. So I don't know. The Model S has always been to just hold me over until that car comes in.
Right. Maddie asks, Taycan or Taycan Cross Turismo?
So I actually have on order the Sport Turismo, but I'm almost thinking like maybe I should just get a Cross Turismo that's on a lot somewhere because, I don't know. I really want to make these adjustments to the Model S first. Also, the Model S has lost so much value since I bought that car. I'm not even going to think about it, but accident report plus now they're $20,000 less. So I think my car was like $155 I paid, something like that. Okay. You can buy the same car now for $125.
Oh, really? It went down that much?
Yeah, I think you can actually buy it for less than $125. And then, of course, the modifications we put into it don't add to the value at all.
Right, no.
And
no.
So, yeah, I mean, we made some great videos with it, still intending to do more, but maybe not the best car buying decision. Don't do what I do.
Right.
You're going to lose some. You win on so many of the things you buy. Every now and then you're going to lose, Kyle.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, I really haven't sold any cars in the last couple of years. And, you know, maybe we should just keep the Model S. I really don't know, but I don't drive it. I mean, for me, it's like I've put in the same time I've had the Rivian and the Model S 2 weeks apart from each other. Mm-hmm. I've put almost 28,000 miles on the Rivian and about 5 on the Model S.
28,000 miles on the Rivian? That's a lot of miles. In a year? Was it been a year?
No, it's not been a year. I got it in early summer.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's mid to high 20s in the Rivian.
That's a lot of miles. Holy cow. I think average for, you know, most people is like 10, 12,000 miles a year.
25,000 miles, sorry.
That's Kyle's monthly totals.
Right.
All he does is drive, let's face it.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, if you just want speed, go buy a brand new Model S Plaid right now, $115,000. You just cannot beat that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, like speed wise. Oh man, it's got so much power. It's just ridiculous.
Well, the car is incredible in so many ways. You get the best tech, the best app. The car looks amazing. And the drivetrain is almost second to none.
Right. All right. Hey, I just want to mention before we move on to you, Tom. I just saw this little thing on the news on my other screen over here. I just want to just mention it because it's so juicy. But it's not really like hard, and I'll just tell you what it is. So GM is exploring a mini electric pickup truck. This is on Automotive News website. Automaker has created a two-door pickup that with a 4 to 4.5 foot long bed and a low roof line. So smaller than a Maverick electric pickup truck they're thinking about doing. I think that'd be great. Do that. Please, GM, do that. all right. Tom, I don't believe you had quite the week driving-wise that Kyle did, but you did put together a great video for your State of Charge channel that shows off the Ford F-150 Lightning's intelligent backup power system working now at your house. So you also wrote up a post about it, that's available on the Inside EV's website. And I think this will be a great resource for people thinking of having this system installed in their own homes. So do you want us to give us like an outline of your particular installation and maybe what a typical customer may have to go through to get this installed and like how they can benefit?
Sure. So it's been a while. This has been a long time in the making, this video. We've talked about it here on the podcast. I got my Lightning in July. I ordered the intelligent backup power system separately. The way Ford has it set up, they make it very easy. If you want to do everything through Sunrun is their preferred installer, and it's also their supplier of the equipment. You actually buy it through Sunrun, and if you get the Ford Charge Station Pro, which is the 80 amp bi-directional charger, you also get that through Sunrun. So when I bought my Lightning with extended range battery, it comes with the extended range battery Lightning. If you get a standard range, you can purchase it. You would then purchase it through Sunrun. You don't get it through your dealership, which is kind of strange. And that's created some issues because a lot of my followers are saying, Tom, it's 2 months later, I got my Lightning. They haven't given me my Charge Station Pro yet. Mine got mailed to me a couple of weeks after I got the truck. It got mailed to me from Sunrun. So in Ford's intelligent backup power system allows you to power your house with your truck in the event of a power outage. But there's a lot of moving parts to this. So I thought I would put together a video of what I had to do, like my installation and all the different parts and what they do. So first off, I needed to have a service upgrade. We talked about this on a previous podcast when I was live when they were here doing that. And that wasn't for intelligent backup power. So I want to be clear to everyone. You would never need a service upgrade for the intelligent backup power system. You would need a service upgrade for the Ford Charge Station Pro if you want it to deliver the full 100 amps. I want to charge my Lightning really quickly. So I needed to have a service upgrade so I could have a 100 amp dedicated circuit in my garage. This service upgrade was long overdue for me anyway, guys. You see what I'm doing here in the garage. And I was already, you know, say over the load calculation that I really should be at my house. But I intelligently balanced the power of my house and I knew not to overload things. I don't recommend people doing that. You know, do as I say, not as I do. But, you know, I managed that for a while and now it was time to do the upgrade. That's my picture of my old system, how it was. And this is what it looks like now. You can see the components all the way to the left now. There's two 200 amp service panels. And that's the previous one. All the way on the far left is a 150 amp service panel. That little panel in the middle I added because I just needed more circuits. And I had an electrician come and do that. And then next to that's my generator service panel. I have a natural gas generator. Where I live here in northern New Jersey, I get a lot of power outages, sometimes as long as 2 weeks long when Hurricane Sandy came. It's a rural area, a lot of trees. They fall down constantly. It takes a while to get the power back up. So I put that in. So I'm not the perfect customer for this. I really don't need intelligent backup power because I have that backup system, but I wanted to install it to explain it to people and see how it works. So I did my service upgrade. I installed intelligent backup power. I still have the natural gas generator and I have solar. So when I used Qmerit, my channel sponsor, to do the installation that they want. You know, Qmerit is a nationwide. They install all type of electric vehicle charging equipment, you know, stationary energy storage. That they wanted to use my installation to build a training program so that their installers around the country. So they, in addition to me, we had a full film crew here filming everything, and they step by step, and they made a video that they're going to train their installers on how to do this. Because the thing is, you know, a lot of people said, "Oh, Tom, you have a really complex system," which I do. You see, I have a solar inverter, I have intelligent backup power, I have a natural gas generator. You know, there's a lot going on there. Your house won't typically look like this. But the thing is, there is no, what's the average installation? You know, how many people have solar now? How many people have a power wall? How many people have other stationary energy storage? These are the people that get EVs. The people that get EVs are much more likely, look at Martin's house, you know, so are much more likely to have additional equipment. So you know, when you say, "Oh, well, yeah, Tom, your installation, that was real. That's not an average system." Well, what is an average system? Is an average system going to be somebody has nothing and then they just come and put this in? Or will an average system be somebody has solar and this? So I figured this was a good opportunity to show you worst case situation. The only way I could have made it harder is if I did have stationary energy storage in addition to the natural gas generator and the solar, you know, which might be a future video.
Have you designed it that you can incorporate home storage one day?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we cool. made sure we set this up so I can do multiple upgrades and changes and move things around and get rid of the generator and do this and do that, which I fully expect in the future to do. I mean, I've had solar companies approach me and say, you know, "We'll take that system off your roof. We'll put our system on your roof." You know, so who knows what's going to happen in the future? The whole thing might be ripped out and changed, which is ridiculous when you consider the amount of work. But this is what I do. And you know, it's not, I would never do this if I was just a customer, but I think it helps people learn and understand how it works. So I tried to make this like a nerdy, slow paced educational video, like I do a lot, you know, and you know, I take twice as long to explain something like I'm doing right now. Than what's really needed. But I went really slow. It was a 40-minute video, and I explained how the power. I paid an animator to animate the power flow under every different situation. Normal grid with solar, generator on. See, this is power's out, the generator's on, and the truck is not plugged in. This is the generator power going to the generator service panel into one of my 200 amp service panels. It won't feed both, but that second one only has the excessive things in my garage, like Ford Charge Station Pro and the Tesla wall connector. So I don't need them during a power outage. I already have the main panel there has my NEMA 1450s out here, so I can still charge cars during a power outage if I needed to.
Hey, Tom, I have a question for you. I first of all, just want to say I watched every minute of this video. I think it's the best video I've watched on YouTube in the last year. Not joking. I texted you that yesterday.
Thank you.
It really is. I was fascinated. I almost want to go back and rewatch it and really loved it because, you know, we're also thinking about doing some sort of bi-directional situation. And it was really, I thought, the best information out there that anyone's doing. And so really loved it. Loved the animations, too. Yeah, I didn't fully understand. When you plug in your Lightning in the state that it's in right now, basically, it's going through the inverter, and then eventually it will go through the 200-amp service panel on the right, which is your accessory load. Is there a way that you can link the two panels so you can send the truck power to the rest of the house?
I'm sorry. I didn't fully understand. I can send the truck power to the rest of the house. No, currently there isn't.
Okay, because that's what I thought.
Because... it depends how you, I can't on this setup.
Right. Okay.
But the thing is, Kyle, you need to understand it can only put out about 38 amps. I know Ford says it's 40 amp, 9.6, but when you read the literature and the inverter itself, it can accept the 40 amps. It can only put out like 38 amps. So you have to have a sub panel or you have to wall off circuits that won't overload it. So if I put that through my panel, I guess, and everything went on, it there could be a problem. It would overload it. So it's not a load shedding service panel. I suppose if I were to install a load shedding service panel as my sub panel. Now my main generator panel is a load shedding generator panel. So that can have the whole house on it and it'll just kick stuff off. It'll say, I don't have enough power for that. I don't have enough power for that. And it'll power the things that are really important to me. So I suppose you could do the setup. I don't know. I'd have to look at it. It might not be able to do that. It might not be able to do load shedding.
I think that would be interesting to see. What I'm really looking forward to are the follow-up videos to this, to say how quickly can it actually power a situation when you pull the breaker.
That's the next video. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great. And then
I'm waiting for the app to work.
I mean, I really think you should overload it, like plug in the Rivian or something, you know, at 10 kilowatts and see what happens. I mean, let's try and blow this thing up.
Now, do you mean the intelligent backup power or the natural gas generator?
No, because generator is easy.
I can't overwhelm the Ford intelligent backup power sub panel. My electricians did load calculations and they made it so you can't overload it. You know, I mean, it's designed so that you won't have that problem, Kyle. But I will certainly turn everything on. I will, we'll do a power outage here and I'll turn on everything in the house, but I'm waiting to get the app functionality. One of the things I explained in the system was the only negative of not having Sunrun do the installation was that right now only Sunrun can link the system to your Ford Pass app. Everything else is linked. It's linked to my truck. It's linked to ChargeStation Pro. Everything works, but I have to turn it on inside the truck. Once they Ford has to update the software. They said it's going to be done this month in January. Then I'll be able to control it with my app. What I'm going to do is go downstairs in the basement. The lights are going to be on. I'm going to have the app on. I'm going to go boom, and all of a sudden everything's going to go dark. And then we'll see how long it takes for everything to turn on. I'll do it with the gas generator, and then I'll also. I can leave the power on in my house, but just kill the power to the intelligent backup power system. So we can just see how quickly that results. The timing has been different so far, which is strange to me. I would think there'd be a set time, like it would turn on in 48 seconds. That hasn't been the case. It's turned on in under a minute, and then it's turned on in a minute and a half. I don't really understand why, but it always turns on, and it always turns on like within a minute and a half, which is kind of long. Considering my generator turns on in like less than 10 seconds, bang, the thing turns on and the house is powering. But I mean, a minute and a half, if you need your power, that's really not, it's not a problem.
Well, I think you also made a great point in your video that the topics of electric cars, working, are they viable? This is a conversation of last year and before. We know they're viable. We know they work. This year is all about how do you actually interconnect the cars with the grid with your home. And that's the topic going forward. So I think the way you described it was great, which is right now we've got to figure out if chargers even work. Then we got to, you know, just getting into let's power your home and outages. But then the real long-term play is how do you integrate all of that battery storage that's just sitting in our driveways with the rest of the grid? And that is what I'm really interested to learning about over the years, keeping on the bleeding edge. I imagine you and I, Tom, are going to be installing all of the systems that we're going to have to rip out just after a few years, because it's going to be this changing environment. And this is really the first of its kind of its system, at least on YouTube, that I've ever seen working like this. And honestly, for being a first iteration, a really nicely integrated solution. I know it's complicated, but props to Ford for actually doing all of this. Yes, you pay a lot more money than just getting a generator off Amazon like Tom shows. It does not financially make sense, but neither did solar years ago. Neither did electric cars years ago. It's just fun to play around with tech. So I still think there's a big enough market for a system like this. If I had a Lightning, I would be interested in a system like this, if not for anything, just to once in a while trip the breaker and test it out, because it's kind of fun.
And you know, and also, you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm not, you know, like a prepper or anything, but I put my system in, got two tranches of solar I put in. There's the stuff on the house, the stuff above me on the flat roof, and then the battery came after that. But at the time, it was a 9.5 year payback. And then Putin burped and invaded Ukraine. And now it's a 2.5 year payback, which is ridiculous because my electricity went from something like 13p a kilowatt hour. Well, I was paying 5 overnight. So I think it's 45p now. Wow. And yet, right now, this whole podcast, everything, the aircon, the lights, the heating, I say aircon, it's -1 here. It is a heat pump aircon, so I'm being heated by it. But everything is running off either. It's a sunny day, cold, bitterly cold here, but sunny. I'm generating about 1.5 last time I looked. So everything, this whole podcast is running off of solar and the overnight battery that store that charged up from the grid over. It's about 4 hours to charge up last night. So you don't know what's like. Kyle's point is like, oh, we'll rip it all out again in 2 years. Like, I thought I was in for the long run and paying this thing back over 10 years. But like, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. We hope that everything is fine and grids are resilient and we're not going to have power cuts and things like that, but it's, we don't know. So it's like, it's worth doing if you're interested.
100%. And one of the things, you know, I talk about at the end about value and, you know, I love the system and I wanted to say, this thing's awesome. Look at this. My truck is powering like, you know, a quarter of my house right now. Mm-hmm. But I also had to come down to reality and say, look, I understand. For many people, this is just not going to be cost effective. It you know, for getting about 9 kilowatts of power, the installation all in is going to be somewhere between $7,500 and $15,000, depending on how complex your situation is, whether or not you have the standard range or extended range battery pack. So look between total all in $7,500, $15,000. The average person, I'd say maybe $10,000 is what it's going to cost them for the system. Think about what $10,000 buys. We could, you know, the damn Lightning comes with the Ford Pro Power Onboard, which is an awesome system. And, you know, I know it's an option with the standard range battery pack. It's like a, $1,200 option. But you know, with the extended range, it's standard. And of course, it's not as elegant. You have a power outage and you've got to run extension cords, you know, all over the place. But, you know, think of the difference in cost. And then you could also just buy a natural gas generator like I did. All in, that would be about the same price as intelligent backup power, somewhere $10,000, $12,000. Or you could buy a small portable generator. Some of them are 12 kW. And then install the manual transfer switch to your house. So you can just plug your generator into the outside of your house and it's powering, you know, a sub panel like this. So there's so many different options. And I couldn't do this video and not tell people, look, here's your options. But then after I'm editing the video and I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, this looks like I don't like this system. Like, this is like, you know, so at the end I had to be like, look, I just have to be clear and honest with everybody. It's super expensive, but I love this thing. And what I love about it, it's the first one out there. Yes, Nissan made a system like this back when the Leaf first came out, and I think they made it available in Japan. It wasn't available here in the US. I know some people like special ordered it and there might be a couple of them actually functioning here, but this is the first like system where the manufacturer here in the US is saying, you want to power your house with your car? Here it is. you know, one call, hey, you want solar added? Boom, it's added. Installer can come out, put it all on your house. We could give you solar. We can give you stationary energy storage. We can put, we can, you can power your house. You can be completely, you know, reliant on your vehicle and during a power outage. And so that to me, somebody had to do this. Somebody had to invest the time in it. Ford's not making money on this. People, you know, are complaining it's expensive. I bet you they're losing right. money on this. This is an investment in the future. So we have to, you know, celebrate these companies that do this and put that much time and effort into something, knowing that it's not going to have a huge uptake, but that it's a blueprint for the future. And that's what this is. What you see right there, that right there is what homes are going to look like in 10 or 12 years. But they wouldn't if companies didn't invest tons, millions of dollars now at a loss to say, look, we know this is first gen, second gen is going to be better, third gen is going to be even better than that. And so for me, this is going to make sense for maybe a small percentage of Lightning owners. But the people that can afford it and it makes sense for are going to love it because it's so cool when you're, you know, you plug the truck in. Part of the video, you see me and I did a power simulation. I shut the power off. I drove my truck down the block. I set up my cameras and you see me driving up the driveway in the dark, the taillights. I come back in the garage. I plug the truck in. And of course, I shut it. I cut it down to like 2 seconds. That's me pulling in the garage instead of like I'm really stood there for like, you know, a minute. And then the lights come on. So that was, you know, super cool. You see the intelligent backup power has power. There's lights on it. That's because there's a lithium ion battery. That's part of the system. It's called the dark start battery. That energizes the system when the power is out. So that, you know, you need to have some sort of power source so the system can communicate. And then boom, watch. There, my lights go on in the house and the lights go on in the truck. That's real. So
hey, Tom, can you see, can you also do a test at some point about how long that battery will last?
Yeah, I certainly can. You know, I mean, we can do the math.
Yeah, you know, well, if something would be interesting because it's tiny, right?
What's that?
It's a tiny battery, but like if you're away for a weekend, let's just say you're up in Vermont, Jersey loses power, you're heading home. You want to be able to make sure you can plug your truck in and get it going.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, here's the thing, Kyle, it's not that tiny. Well, first of all, it's tiny compared to like a car battery, but I mean, it's, you know, 14 inches by 14 inches and maybe 3 inches thick. You know, if a good portion of the inside of that is a lithium ion, I don't know how big the battery is. But it's just, the only thing it's running is you know, it's letting the system communicate. And there's a couple LED lights. I think it would last for a while. But you know, that's a good idea. I got to figure out if I can live with the circuits that I put on because the circuits on intelligent backup power I'm using every day. So if I just shut that system off and let the battery just drain, I got to see how inconvenient it would be for me to live for a week or whatever without
Tom
those circuits.
Be showered. His hair would start growing different places.
Well, I could do it. I know. I'm not sure how happy Meredith would be with like, oh yeah, by the way, the TV in the family room, isn't going to work for the next week, you know, and the lights in the upstairs bathroom aren't going to work either, you know? So,
that's funny.
But yeah, no, it's, I love the system. I almost felt like when it was done that I was too negative talking about the cost, but I felt that had to be addressed.
Yeah.
The average Joe probably isn't going to be able to do this cost effectively. There's other solutions. But for the people that can afford it, it's really cool. And I think they're going to want to get it.
And that's what makes you unimpeachable, as I described you at the top of the show, right? You have to show like the ugly side of things as well as, you know, the good sides and the positive sides. You have to, you know, people need a balanced picture.
You have to. And I got some really good feedback, emails and comments from people that, you know, one person sent me a long email who I don't even know who the person is. That they just found my email and were like, you know, I just want to say I watched this. And, you know, if anybody moving forward ever says that, like, you know, you're compromised because you go on media drives and you take their, you know, that you fly you here or fly you there, like, you know, just point them to this video because, you know, you could have done, you know, you know, this could have damaged your relationship with Ford because you're out there saying their new system isn't worth it, but you were being honest. And So, you know, I always try to be honest. If people are going to believe me, some people aren't going to believe me. I'm not going to sweat that.
I don't know if you've spoken to them yet, but they're going to be like, yeah, they're going to be like, well, that all adds up because it does.
Yeah, you have to. You have to, you know, and I think they know that we're, you know, straight shooters, you know, for the most part. They know who are straight shooters and who aren't, you know, out there just trying to do sensational things to get clicks and so forth. You know, I'll lose views and clicks because I'm, you know, sometimes maybe not as exciting as I should be.
I mean, you're pretty exciting, Tom. I don't know.
Well, you ponied up and installed the system as a customer. You should be able to say what you want about it, of course, and you did. I think, truly the best video I've watched on YouTube in the last year.
I appreciate that, Kyle. I know you don't just say. Kyle doesn't just say things. You know,
that's right.
Like that. You know, he wouldn't say that. So I appreciate it. So I want to know, when you're coming here to make a video of you for your followers to say, look, I'm at Tom's house. Let's check out this thing works. You know, and then you could, you know, we'll shut the power off and all that stuff. So,
sooner than you think, you
drive all over the country, for crying out loud. You got to make another stop here. You have been here. Kyle has been to my house, but, we got to make another stop and do a video here.
Yep. Absolutely. Got to do it. That's, cause there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to film. I want to go film some of Revel's stuff in New York City with all their charging parks that they're planning, and I got to go see my parents. So yeah, road trip in the future. Actually, maybe soon. I don't know. I bought this new car this week, and it's in Michigan, and I got to go get it. And I'm like already halfway, so may as well just go to New York at that point.
It's not a Twizy, is it?
It is a Twizy.
Oh, really? Okay. I saw you trying to buy one on Twitter or something like a couple of weeks ago, but then it fell through or something. It was weird.
No, the guy just never responded, and then we thought it was a scam. But then Tom found him and said, oh, no, this dude's legit. And then I reached out to him, and I guess he was just on vacation. I paid for it. So I guess I own a Twizy. I don't know if I'll ever see it. I mean, it's still not mine until it's mine. But the money has left the account.
But yeah, my first reaction when I saw what happened was, dude, you got scammed. And so then I was like, well, maybe not. So I started, I did some searches of this guy online, and I found him. And I'm like, no, he's an executive at a company that, like, you know, what exactly does he do? Because he was benchmarking it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this makes sense. He would own one of these. So I'm like, this really might be real. But initially, when you send somebody $8,000, you know, on eBay, and then they ghost you, 99 times out of 100, you got scammed. And I think PayPal is insured, right?
I'm protected. And actually, I guess some executives at eBay Automotive are viewers, and they reached out to me. They're like, hey, we'll make whatever you want happen. So I wasn't worried, still not worried, but finally got in touch with the guy, and he's like, oh yeah, it's just sitting in a warehouse in Michigan. We've never really full charged it. We've never drained it. We know how to take care of batteries. I'm like, this is my guy.
Nice. Can you legally drive that on the roads here though? How are you going to drive it on the road?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
There's air quotes about it for people not watching this on YouTube.
There might be a video that's called "The U.S. Government Crushes My Twizy," which would be really smart.
They have to catch you first, right?
That has very a German cool. title, so it's like not really fully.
There's got to be a way. There's got to be a way.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think we can just get a manufacturer plate on it. We'll just say Out of Spec is intending to build the next best electric car, so we have to benchmark the best car ever, get a manufacturer plate, and then the Twizy.
Of course, nobody will know your plan.
If we can have like Alpha Motors, we can have Tech Motors, right?
Well, I don't see actually why we couldn't just sign up and start a company and say, yeah, we're intending to build electric cars and get manufacturer plates, just get a Michigan M plate for it. You know, we just get a little office there or something. Like, we have people there. Like, I may as well get a little spot and, you know, just so I can drive my Twizy around. Or honestly, the cops in our town are so chill. The thing only goes 35 miles. Our new building's right next to the police station. You know, like we already know half the guys there. I honestly think I could just drive it and be totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, but Kyle, you know, you've got too much to lose.
Yeah, as long
as you have
an
accident, somebody jumps out in front of you, you hit them or something,
it'll be fully insured. Yeah. You can insure it, no problem. You just can't necessarily register it.
Just be careful with that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can take it off road. I mean, you can like take it off on like private road and drive it or whatever. So insurance would come in handy there, right? So you need to be able to insure it.
Oh, everything has to be insured, in my opinion. So it'll 100% get insured. But I think if anyone's getting into an accident, regardless of insurance, I would be on the losing end in the Twizy.
Smidge 204 knows you. Benchmarking includes doing donuts in the Walmart parking lot.
Absolutely. It's rear wheel drive. We're going to chip it, unlock the speed, get the full 7 horsepower out of that thing.
All right. So big product news of the week this week is the debut of the Winnebago ERV2, an all-electric camper van. It's called the ERV2 because Winnebago showed off an earlier version of this thing last year. So this is like the sequel. So as you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube, Martin will have it up for us in a second. The ERV2 is based on the Ford E-Transit. So if you're thinking, wait, the E-Transit only gets 126 miles of range and a low roof configuration from its 68 kilowatt hour battery, well, you're not alone. Winnebago themselves recognize that this isn't enough range for a commercial product. So for now, this is merely a prototype. But still, Winnebago is planning on making like a small fleet of them and testing them out over a period of 6 months or so, and then using what they've learned to inform future product decisions. So we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this, but it's worth mentioning that the ERV2 also has a 15 kilowatt hour battery separate from the main drive battery to help you camp off grid. And it also has this really cool 900 watt solar panel situation integrated into the roof. And it looks pretty neat. One of the things I think we can learn about this is that it's unlikely that RV makers are going to dive into engineering their own vehicle powertrains, which is understandable since that gets into big money and automakers and others are already doing that kind of work. So probably more efficient to use other people's technology. So Kyle, you're all about that camper van life. Where would you like to see Winnebago go with this? Like a van like this, a pull behind with an integrated battery motor, or maybe jump to something large like Winnebago's known for, like an upfitted Tesla Semi or something?
Well, I own a Winnebago product. They're one of their Sprinter vans. And right. So I actually know some of the people working on this project, just met them at shows and stuff and shared my opinions with them. And the original concept was built on the Lightning E-Motors Ford conversion. And the reason that was really interesting was, maybe it didn't charge as well. It didn't have all the full integration that an automaker, you know, ground up EV would have. I've reviewed that exact product, but it was a 3500 chassis, which means you could really put a lot of stuff in there. The E-Transit's only available with really low payload comparatively to their dually versions. Okay. So when you start adding in the tanks, when you start adding in their battery packs, which they probably use the same system that I have in my Sprinter to run everything, the amount of weight that you can actually bring with you in this concept product is probably minimal. I know Sprinters generally have a pretty low payload, but I think I can only bring like 600 or 700 pounds, including people, before I'm over recommended weight. So that's a concern with this for me. The second concern, of course, is the driving range. RVs are meant to get you out into the wild, go to places we would want to go. And unfortunately, you're going to be on like a 50-mile tether to the nearest charging station. Now, thankfully, campgrounds have NEMA 1450 plugs at them. However, the reason you buy a van is not to sit at campgrounds. We bought a van so we could go out in the middle of nowhere. And right. So, the last thing I want to do is open the window and see some dude half naked getting out of his Winnebago, whatever. So, we like to go out where, BLM land out into the middle of nowhere. We're like our diesel tank range is getting a little bit tight. We actually have an extended fuel tank option on our Sprinter that we can use. And we have had to use on our Alaska trip. So I really think electric is not the best application for this at all at the moment. If you do a lot of highway miles, it's going to take forever to charge. E-Transit's not a fast charging vehicle. So where I think this needs to go next is you're absolutely right, Dom, that there's not a lot of engineering money in the RV world, especially for chassis and drivetrain. It never has been. They've always bought existing applications. So I have not seen any super long range electric vans, Rivian van. If you look at BrightDrop, you're in that mid 100-mile range, something like that. Fine for Amazon deliveries, not fine for going out there. So I think we need a range extended option. And by that, it would be electric powertrain driving the vehicle, because then you get the instant response. But it's a little bit like the i3 situation, where you could have, you know, a four-cylinder engine, for example, just running. And then the one thing Winnebago really missed out on here was the integration with the high voltage battery pack. If you had a range extended option, you could just use your vehicle's traction battery to power the rest of everything inside the van. Why do you need a separate electrical system? So I really think they missed the whole boat on this here. You know, obviously they debuted it at the big Tampa RV show this week. I really wanted to go because I'm an RV nerd. But I really think they just don't get it. And it's not, this is not a useful product. It's going to be way too expensive if they ever make it, and no one's going to buy it.
No one's going to buy this. I'd do the same thing. Close your ears and eyes and ears, everybody, but stick an engine in this for the next 8 years till the end of the decade. Wait to the next iteration of battery or the one after technology will get there. Look, the point of electric vehicles, if we can clean up 99% of everything we do, school buses and taxis and all of those kind of things, there are edge cases. This is a total edge case.
There's so many other things that we need to electrify.
And we shouldn't be pretending that actually this is going to be successful at all. So well done. I like the fact they tried it. But like the BMW Rex or the new Mazda MX-30 with its rotary engine, do that with this, get it all integrated, and then you've just got unlimited range.
Right. But I mean, there are things like I said, like the Tesla Semi chassis, 500 miles of range as a semi truck. If you had it as a camper configuration, I don't know. I think that'd get you pretty close.
Well, because you got 900 kilowatt hours worth of batteries slapped underneath you.
I mean, it's a big dollar, high dollar situation we're talking about here. But
well, actually, the big dollar doesn't scare me. If you look at the high-end coaches, if you look at Newell's, if you look at some of these Liberty coaches that are Prevost conversions, these are $1.5, $2.5, $2.8 million. When you consider a cost of a $250,000 semi, that's pennies. That doesn't account for anything. It's the whole building of the rest that really would be. So I see a semi truck becoming an RV well before this van becoming an RV. And the interesting thing is, if you have a Tesla Semi as an RV, you don't need a CDL to drive it, and you can do RV financing, which everyone loves. You know, you could 200 months, something ridiculous. You know, you just amortize it out forever, and you could most people, I think, that are spending that much money on RVs probably have the cash to drop. But I think the semi is much more of a reality before we see a small van like this.
Right. And I think it's going to be a while before I think Tesla has those chassis available for upfitting to something like that anyway, if ever, you know?
Eventually, but not anytime soon.
Right. But I just think, I'm not really on their product roadmap at all.
What do you think about the new Mercedes e-Sprinter? Was range tested 300 miles from Munich to Stuttgart.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, the range on the vans are, it's getting better. It's getting there. That still wouldn't be enough for Kyle's use, because especially once you load it up with everything, the range is going to be less. And it's still, I almost think, Kyle, for Kyle's use, he'd need 300 miles of solid range with the load, fully loaded with all the stuff in that and everything. And that would probably do it for you, especially if you could throw some panels up on the roof and when you're parked, start trickle charging the battery and so forth. But that far away,
The Hummer 200 kilowatt hour battery, that would do.
Well, someone commented the BrightDrop actually has 200 and something miles of range. Yeah. But then again, my Sprinter's rated for 18 or 19 mpg, 20 mpg, something like that. I get 8 or 9 going across Wyoming with a 50 mile an hour headwind pegged at 87 miles an hour. And that's how we drive out here. I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere through Wyoming. So the van needs to be able to do that. It needs to hop from charger to charger, and it needs to be four-wheel drive. I mean, van life is very different in Europe than it is in America. In Europe, you can have a shorter range, not off-road capable, campground-to-campground lifestyle, caravanning, as Martin would know. It's not the same culture we have here, which is we're putting lift kits, big tires, we're going out on trails, getting our vehicle stuck out there. We got max tracks and winches. You know, we want to get out in the middle of nowhere. And right now there's no end in sight. There's no near term solution for this.
Yeah, there's nowhere in this country that is the middle of nowhere. Like, you can go to the middle of Wales or Scotland and get away from people, but you're still not, like, you know, you can get to someone pretty quickly if you're stranded. So unless you're going proper rural, you can get to the top and bottom of the country in 500 miles. So look, there's if we go on a week's camping or a week's motorhoming, maybe you're doing 25, 30 miles hopping from campsite to campsite. Maybe you'll go to one where there's a bay, you do some surfing or something, and, you know, go around Cornwall in the southwest or something. Then the next one, there's, you go see some, you know, 1,000-year-old castles or something. But we're not doing those 1,000 miles a day here anyway. I mean,
right.
Up and down the country.
Right on. So speaking of camper van life, Bavaria-based Alpine Camper showed off the first camper version of the ID Volkswagen ID Buzz this week. Volkswagen will probably get around to doing something like this for itself, but for now, if you want a camper version, then these appear to be the people to talk to. And I just thought we'd throw it up there real quick for people to check out, because I think it looks really cool. It's got a pop-up roof, so you can, like, stand up in it. It's not like, if you look at this picture on YouTube, if you're watching this on YouTube, there's some other vehicles that they have. They have also the traditional, like, pop-up beds, tents on the roof situation where you can sleep up there, but it's not on the ID Buzz, but you can it pops up so you can, like, stand up nicely inside and move around a little bit in the back of your ID Buzz. So that looks pretty cool. I'm not sure what we're looking at there. It looks like a dog bowl. Maybe it's a sink.
Yeah. That's the sink.
I reckon induction.
Right. And then the sink, little tap. And this is cool. Again, it's a weekend vehicle. Right. And I live, as some people know, I live by the beach, and I see these kind of vehicles all the time. And I reckon they've done like 10 miles from slightly inland. You get under the beach, open up the side, the kids play on the beach, and then you go back to it and you make a cup of tea or your sandwich at lunchtime. And then this is the perfect vehicle for this kind of thing. You're not going very far. It's just a hauler to stick, you know, I don't know, surfboards on the roof or something, and then pile everything in, and the dogs and the kids, but you're not doing decent range. So the Buzz is perfect for this, and it looks really cool. I mean,
can't wait till we get it here.
It's big enough to be serviceable for a day.
That's not coming to the US this year, is it?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, you can buy one, couldn't you? If they want to bring one in.
I was just thinking we didn't mention on our like end of the year show with all the new cars coming.
Yeah, we
have to wait for the extended wheelbase, large battery only, I would think.
Right.
Because I range tested this. It doesn't go very far in a charge.
No. So this is like the short wheelbase version with the camper. Oh.
The short wheelbase is the only one available.
Okay.
And it's a base one, too. It's a Pro, or whatever they call it. Got the clear tails.
I mean, it's kind of impressive that they can manage to fit all that stuff nicely, and it still looks like relatively comfortable back there. You know,
it wouldn't be. You would be so cramped in that thing, Dominic.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so let's move along. So this is probably not the biggest news of the week, but it might be the coolest. Volvo is changing the single motor versions of the XC40 and C40 rear-wheel drive instead of front-wheel drive. So enthusiasts rejoice. Thumbs up from Kyle. So I didn't realize this, but this will be the first rear-wheel drive car in the Volvo lineup in 25 years, because they have all-wheel drive, and then sometimes they have like front-wheel drive, I guess. But yeah, a long time. So the motor appears to be a slightly different unit than what was used on the front, or at least it gets a little more power, 235 horsepower instead of 228. Now there's also an option for a larger rear drive motor as well that puts out 248 horsepower. So a little bit of a boost there. It's not too big. That one's only available with the big 82 kilowatt hour battery option, though. So range with the smaller battery, at least, is slightly better than the front wheel drive configuration, though they say that's due to improved cooling efficiency. So the XC40 gets 17 more miles of EPA range, up to 240 miles, while the C40 gets 245 miles with this new rear-wheel drive configuration. Charging has also been improved. Peak rate is said to be up to 200 kilowatts, up from 150, and charging from 10 to 80% can be as quick as 28 minutes, which is mediocre, okay? Kyle, I think you're probably loving this development, but so what are your thoughts? And why do you think they would do this with Volvo first and not Polestar?
Well, Polestar gets it, I think, model year 24. You know, this was my biggest issue with, especially Polestar being a performance brand. They already had a motor on the front. They had a motor on the back. They removed the wrong one. And, you know, I complained about it as soon as I saw it. I have never driven a front wheel drive when I have zero interest in doing so. But I would like to do a front wheel drive versus rear wheel drive. This is
right. You have to do a front wheel drive versus rear wheel drive version. This is going to be a great video.
Oh my God. It's like what, the Blazer or is the Equinox that you can get a front wheel drive, all wheel drive or rear?
mm-hmm.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Another one. Welcome to the craziness of electric powertrains. But, you know, this is the correct choice. Thankfully, they obviously listened to this podcast. And so, no, it's really great. You know, at the end of the day, I think that rear motor upgrade is what they get in the Polestar Performance Pack upgrade software slapped on it would be my guess. So I personally would still go Performance Pack, Polestar with the upgrade software. Recently reviewed that vehicle, really loved it. Correct choice. That's great. The charging speed's really interesting too, because these started out as one of the worst charging electric cars on sale. Now I would say they're somewhat livable now, especially with preconditioning and opening up the curve. And now it sounds like they're getting even better and right on par with ID4, which we've seen a peak of around 190 kilowatts on of the newer version. So, you know, they're staying relevant. They're more expensive cars. They're more premium cars. They're very thirsty. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these iterations improve it over time.
Kylan V shares that they've updated P2 specs today. P2, what's Polestar 2, I guess?
Yes.
So long range, all-wheel drive, 82 kilowatts, 420. 475
horsepower. Spicy.
Yeah.
Like, you know what looks amazing is that Polestar 2, whatever the white one they put the Polestar 1 wheels on. That's like a special edition situation.
And yeah, they sold out. Yeah.
Yeah. The CEO is driving it at the headquarters, and that's where I saw it for the first time. And I was like, whoa, that looks sick.
Polestar is an interesting company. They built a space, you know, they call their showroom spaces. So they built one out of ice, like, I guess in, I don't know, where are they at? Sweden? Yeah.
Yeah.
Iceland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. The BTS. Anyway. Yeah. There we go. BS.
Edition 270. So good. They sold them all as you can imagine, they would. But yeah,
incredible.
I love that they're making. I love them making the cars better. I love it because there's a real premium as well. It's not just the badge. It is that you are paying a lot of money for those.
In the U.S., no tax credit. Like, you would be dumb to buy this over a Model Y, I think, especially with the tax credit.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a pretty nice looking car though, and
but it's also a combustion car adapted to electric.
Yeah, the Volvo is
that when you drive it,
and the Polestar 2 is on the used market here, depreciating. I think I don't know. I don't. This is not a scientific study. From what I look at, window shopping all the time, I think you can get a really decent Polestar 2 now in the last couple of months for pretty decent money. Saying that, I was looking at Hyundai Ioniq 5s this week as well, and they're about 40 grand because you want to spec the ultimate trim, whatever it is in your language, the top one, and or even get a Project 45, which was the launch edition, which came with all the bells and whistles
and the solar panel, right?
Yeah, and so that's not much more than 40 now. And I always filter my searches less than 20,000 miles because I don't want something that's been rinsed on the motorway because they're outliers. So I always set my search for less than 20,000 miles and look at the kind of cars that are coming on the market week on week. And Polestars are very, very reasonable. Whether they're coming off short-term leases, I don't know, and going through the auction, or people just don't know, they're not comfortable in the secondhand market of Polestar being a brand that they can, you know, I'm not seeing a Polestar deal on every corner. So what if it breaks? I'm not sure what that reason is. But yeah, I think I think the big Tesla price cuts, well, there was a big Tesla depreciation before Christmas. And I think then the price cuts that happened. Did you do that last week on the show I wasn't on? That has just absolutely sort of decimated anyone's hope of selling a car for a profit. So yeah, it's there's some deals out there at the moment, actually. And Polestar is one of those ones that, if you don't mind a used car, which I prefer, by the way, I love used cars, you get some deals on those at the minute.
I like that, keeping below 20,000 mark. That's a nice strategy. For, like, I was looking at through the used cars yesterday.
If I've got a filter online, I always filter less than 20k, because I'm looking at cars that are less than 3 years old, because most modern EVs have hit the market recently, and I don't want to see a price and be like, oh, okay, and then sort of mentally remember something, but then I didn't bother to look this done 90,000 miles in 3 years. So I always, you know, set my search for that.
Well, how we've got this, the used market changed, you know. Think about just 4 or 5 months ago, how, like, you know, people were buying cars and then selling used at a profit.
Right.
Look what happened in 3 or 4 months. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
Don, let's hear a Bolt update.
No.
How is it? Does it drive nice?
I was on dealers.
Have you watched it yet?
On the phone with dealers like this morning.
It's the end of January. All year we were hearing, wait till January.
The country is your market.
Yeah, and I'm calling all over the country. I'm dealing with somebody in Rochester. I'm waiting to hear back that
If you don't get an answer, yes, I'm selling you this car today. Boom, next one.
Yeah, no, I've been doing that pretty much. I mean, well, so I found this one in Rochester. It's great. It's fine. It's, my color is cheap. Boom, I put the thing. Is it there? They get back to me. I said, send me emails. So this guy calls me on my phone. Okay. Then he's like, oh, it's not there, it's in transit. But then, you know, hours later, their internet specials gets in touch with me and says, no, that's not right, we have it or something. So I said, okay, well, if you have it at this price, let me know, because I will buy it. And then I'm still waiting to hear back. They're like, come on. Like, and it's like this all over the place. I'm finding cars, and then, you know, my local dealer found one he could buy from somebody else, but then they've put like $5,000 worth of ceramic coating on it. It's like, yep.
Yeah, no Chevy Bolts needs a $5,000 ceramic coating.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't it was like $1,500 ceramic coating, but then a bunch of other little things, you know, nitrogen.
You know, they ruin it in that process, most of them, because watching Colton do all this paint work, I'm like, no dealership is spending this much time, you know, 7 days on a car.
Right. 7 days.
Colton, yeah, man. That's what Colton does. I mean, it's insane. But let's why don't I will today, after this podcast, just take a stroll over to my local Chevy dealer. I can almost see it from my house.
Okay.
And I'm just going to ask around.
Sure.
Are you color agnostic, or it has to be blue?
No, I'm pretty color agnostic. I love the light blue, but you know, white is fine. Blue is, or black is fine. I forget what other color. Dark blue is not my favorite, but red is not my favorite, but you know. Well, dark blue is my least favorite, basically, I think. There's not a whole lot of great color choices for this thing.
And then if I find one here, you can fly out and drive it back and then compare your Bolt road trip experience to the Tesla experience. Or I saw someone this week, Brandon Flash tweeted about it. Someone bought a Model 3 all-wheel drive with FSD for $25,000.
What?
Yeah, had 100,000 miles, but who cares? These things last forever.
Yeah, man, that's the thing. 100,000 miles. So who I'm cares? In a situation, but if it breaks, then I can't afford to fix it.
You know, but then what's going to break?
I don't know. You never know. Sometimes things happen. You know?
We've proven our Tesla. We've tried to destroy that thing. And the only thing that's broken is when you crashed it.
Scraped it. Oh, my gosh.
And would that would have qualified for the used tax credit, right? Is $25,000 the limit?
$25,000. This limit has to be 2 years old. I was doing the math on this last night, so it's up to $4,000 or 30%, whichever is.
So that probably would have qualified, Kyle. Even less than $25,000 got paid for it.
Didn't even think about that.
Wow, I forget about the used tax credit all the time.
Right. Yeah. So I figured to get that.
You might have paid $21,000 for that.
Wow,
that would be crazy. And if it breaks, the battery's worth almost that much alone.
Easily, yeah, easily.
Oh, man.
The used EVs have so much inherent value in their batteries. It's just impossible to say, you know, what the floor price is going to be of an electric car, because it's worth. Although the supply of new vehicles is getting better on a global scale, the supply of batteries, they will be used anywhere, whether it's home storage, grid storage, or second life, third life, like we're not going to have enough batteries for the next 10 years. And so it's hard to work out the floor price of a car, but a Tesla for 21 grand, whatever it is,
it's true,
is inherently worth that much.
Because if something happened to it, I could always put like the battery from that in my truck.
Take the wheels off it and sell it as a battery.
Yeah, well, with so many Model 3s, you know, all the motor controllers, everything, it's already out there and it's going to become ubiquitous. We'll be able to use Model 3 batteries in just 2 or 3 years for anything, for home storage, to power old cars, because all of that's going to be unlocked. All of the supporting hardware and software will be out there. And that's just going to increase the natural value of the car.
Look at what I paid. I paid $8,000 for a 10 kilowatt hour home storage. Yeah, okay. So it's by SolarEdge, and I've got a SolarEdge inverter. I have SolarEdge panels. And so, yes, it all works nicely in one app, et cetera, et cetera. But that's like $10,000, right? The current exchange rate. And that's for 10 kilowatt hours of storage. And okay, I can use it's 100% depth of discharge. Bizarrely, it's not LFP cells inside it. So it's, you know, it's kind of way more than you really need for home storage. But look at the price of home storage. Look at Tesla's Powerwall. If you can get one, you got to wait a year to get one. Look at the price of home storage versus the price of buying a used EV. Put it on bricks in your driveway and using that as, you know, 60 kilowatt hours of home storage. It doesn't make any sense at the moment.
That's a good point.
And Dom, look at me. I was complaining that intelligent backup power cost $10,000. For that, you get a 130 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you think of it that way, you know, comparing it to, now it's not the same because it's not always at the ready and, you know, but Ford even said they will allow you to use it for as energy arbitrage and like plug it into your house and charge your battery up overnight. In the morning when your rates go up, shut your main off and let the truck power the house. And then like they're allowing you to do that without interfering with your warranty. So like, you know, when you think of it in that light, it's not that expensive. You know, yeah, I was so complaining about it before. What's that?
You should get a Lightning, Dom.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I should have pre-ordered the like that low end one. I could have done that. I could have somehow like sell my truck because I would need one. And then, I could have figured something that make that work somehow.
The people that pre-ordered them early on and actually got them for the $40,000, and a few of them went out there before Ford continued to raise the price. Man, they got a deal. I know there's not a lot of them, but there are people out there that got them for that price, and that is ridiculous. I mean, I've had followers tell me all in they paid like $54,500, and they got some options. You know, like that's nuts. But those days are gone.
My dad found a guy. He's going up to make a video with him soon. Who bought literally the base one with no options and paid sticker.
Yeah,
I'm like, they're out there. Only guy, but yes, go make a video with him.
Yeah.
So real quick, while we're on top of Volvo, we're not really on top of Volvo so much anymore. But I just want to mention that it's going to make its own version of the Zeekr 009 minivan. So I believe we showed this to y'all a little while back. It's the minivan with a big blingy front end treatment built on the Geely SEA platform. So I'm curious to see what it will look like when Volvo gets a hold of it, and whether they decide they can sell it in other markets.
It's brilliant, but it's horrible to look at. But it's, you know, it's very, it's, I would call it Chinese luxury. When you, the inside specs of this, it's got 6 captain's chairs. There's little speakers and microphones in all of the headrests. So if you're sitting in the back of this thing, and you can talk to somebody in the front seat, just as we are now, without shouting over anyone. So there's full of those kind of things. And it could be great for airport shuttles and that. But how are Volvo going to possibly make this not look horrific? I don't know.
Well, it's a boxy shape, and Volvo is great at making boxy shapes look good, right?
Well, maybe.
And those boxy shapes also are great for interior space. So, this is going to be a really nice product. But I don't think they can sell it here unless they actually build it here as well, because with the Inflation Reduction Act incentives and everything. But yeah.
This went into production this week or last week. I think they started rolling.
And it's just gone into production. Actually, the Zeekr 009, what we're looking at right now, if you were looking at us on YouTube or Twitch, that has gone in production this week. Actually,
Zeekr was like, BMW, you think you've got big grills? Hold my beer.
So your dog, I heard you like grills. I kind of like how audacious it looks, and with those funky looking, I guess those aren't headlights, but the parking lights or whatever.
Love DRLs, yeah.
Yeah, but the real headlights, I guess, are hidden kind of down below in that like dark segment. But I like the way this looks a lot. Ooh, I think it's
go back
really cool.
One picture, Martin.
Yeah, go on.
Look at the seating position, full race mode in the
Oh, right.
This is how Kyle Connor kind of car.
This is how you would drive this as low.
The headrest is like, wow. Good eye, that. Kyle. Man.
Man, I got to drive one of these things. I think it actually looks so cool. And, you know, we're working on planning a China trip again, third time in a row. Maybe this time it'll actually happen, you know, now that you can actually go over there. But I got to drive this.
Yep. It'll be very cool.
Okay, so real quick, we should talk about this. We're up against it. The Jeep Avenger won't be on sale for a few more months yet, but it's already won the European Car of the Year at the Brussels International Motor Show by... You know, selected by accredited journalists from a number of different publications, it beat out the ID Buzz, the Volkswagen ID Buzz, the Nissan Ariya, and the Kia Niro EV. So I'm not sure how it wins the reward, but I don't know if there's been drive programs for this in Europe. Has anyone actually driven this? Like,
I don't know. Maybe I've seen some people driving it. This reminds me of it was pre-COVID, so maybe 2019 or 2020, the What Car Awards, quite well known over here, big magazine. Their final, it's a grand, you know, hotel, big award ceremony, all sort of get your tux on, all that kind of stuff. I remember being at that a few years ago, and the final award of the night was the Car of the Year, and it's always in December or January. And I think it was the e-Niro or Niro EV, whatever flavor it's called in your country. And I'd turn to the Kia PR person next to me, I mean, isn't that 12 months waiting? And they're like, yeah, you literally can't buy the Car of the Year in the year that it's won Car of the Year. This is like, this is the most ridiculous thing. Now, I don't know anybody who's on the judging panel for European Car of the Year.
Right.
And I think it is, you know, a good journalists who don't need to give awards out because Jeep are buying full page adverts in print magazines. But it's weird.
I mean, it's like BMW i7, Mercedes EQS, and then on the lower end, you can have Kia EV6 GT, Ioniq 5N, but this Jeep.
Yeah.
So as a quick reminder, this is not coming to the U.S., but the Avenger has a WLTP range of 248 miles. It's front-wheel drive and goes to 0 to 60 in maybe like 9 seconds. What? So not quick.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not. There's something not right about this European Car of the Year.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like NACTOY is, I think, which is our version of this.
Right.
Totally influenced, by the way, but at least like Lightning won, and like that should have won Truck of the Year. But this is really crazy. We got to research what's going on here.
Yeah. I don't know anybody on the, I think there's a couple of YouTubers that have kind of done pretty well from moving over from print journalism that I think they're pretty straight up guys and girls. So
I don't doubt that. Yeah. But I wonder if they voted for that.
This is weird. This isn't Car of the Year. This is not European. But
unless it's just so good in that 240 miles of WLTP range that it just left them with a lasting impression of pure bliss.
I mean, look, I've got some scruples, but if Stellantis want to pay me, you know, $1 million, and I'll declare this the EV News Daily Car of the Year. I mean, my moral line only goes so far. So I could be persuaded. I got a mortgage to pay off, but Car of the Year, I'm not suggesting anything.
All right. Hey, so we haven't had too much controversy on this week's show yet, sort of. So let's get political really quick at the end. Okay. Let's not actually get political, so let's talk about some politicians. Apparently in Wyoming, some want to ban sales of electrics by 2020-35. Tom, I believe you wrote this up. Are they actually serious, or is this like a political statement or something?
So, you know, I took the position, I tried not to make it political, I took the position that Wyoming's just trying to bring attention to the fact that, look, they're an oil and gas state, and they're you know, by far the least populated state in the country and the least populated per mile, you know, persons per mile and so forth. But yet they do provide, they're like the eighth largest provider of like oil and gas for the nation. So, you know, that's their business. And they see a horizon where the governments like California, New York, are saying we're banning the sale of combustion vehicles, you know, within, you know, a decade or so. So they're looking at this and saying, you know, if we don't, you know, speak up, we're going to be in, we potentially could have some serious problems. This is what we export, you know, from the state. So I think this is more of a point. And that's what I pointed out in the article, that it wasn't politically saying we hate electric vehicles as much as it was saying, look, don't forget about us. You know, we've been providing, we've been providing energy for this country for many years now. And now all of a sudden you're saying our energy is no good. And I think it was more of to bring attention to the fact that, that, you know, they have to get smarter, but they also want the federal government to say, look, we'll be a part of this. If we ban electric vehicles, we'll maybe help to get you other revenue sources or whatever. You know, you'd get some other sort of industry. We'd give you help with some other sort of industry. I really think that's what it was, more than them saying we hate electric cars. Now, let's face it. Martin talked earlier about how, you know, don't try to squeeze that square peg in the round hole with the RVs. And, you know, there's going to be edge cases that electric vehicles don't work at. Well, you know, Montana and Wyoming are edge cases in the U.S. as far as, you know, even regular personal transportation vehicles, let alone trucks and things like that, where they're not, electric vehicles aren't as well suited in those areas because it, people have to travel extremely long distances. It gets very cold in the winters. You know, there's no infrastructure. So I'm not saying electric vehicles won't work there, but
It's more challenging state.
It's much more challenging. So there, I think this was basically them just saying, look, you know, we'll be on board with these, but maybe a decade after the coasts are going to be. So you can't just ban them and say, okay, you know, if all the other states ban combustion vehicles, the manufacturers are going to stop making them.
Right.
So they won't, they won't be able to buy them there. You know, so I think this is what it was more than anything. And I have to say, I've been writing articles on Inside EVs for a decade now. I've written thousands of articles. I've produced videos. I have never gotten so many hate mail messages,
nasty
emails,
holy cow,
threatening
man.
My life. And if you read the article, I didn't, like, I also got people writing, conservatives from Wyoming saying, I'm a ultra conservative. I think you did a really good job with that piece. You didn't talk down on us. Like some people like talk down on, you know, call us backwards, you know, dumb Republican rednecks and so forth. But you explain that, look, we have a problem here. And this maybe is bringing attention to the problem the state's going to have. But on the other side, and I showed some of the guys on Inside EVs, some of the emails that I got that were like, I mean, like I could send them into the FBI and have these people investigated. They were that bad, but you know, I'm not sweating it.
Man, it's it's kind of crazy. But yeah, they need to start looking at, you know, the future. I mean, oil states, so the places that depend on the more exports, because we're going to still be pumping oil and selling oil for, you know, decades and decades to come. We won't be burning as much, but you know, we still use, you know, oil products for lots of other things besides burning. And so the more affordable, more accessible, easy to, you know, refine the higher quality deposits, whatever, those are going to keep on going forever. But it is time for, you know, people in Wyoming or the politicians or maybe to look at what's coming down the road and start planning now for that. Because they can't just like obviously ban selling electric cars in the state, because that would put all the car dealers out of business in 2035. They wouldn't be able to sell enough vehicles.
Yeah. I forgot. I didn't really explain what the article was. You did. And if you look at the real bones of this, they proposed banning the sale of EVs past 2035. If you really look at the bones of it, they really were encouraging citizens and businesses in the state to not support electric vehicles. It wasn't the specific verbiage in this, it wasn't a bill, it was a, gotta forget the proper term, resolution or whatever, what was to discourage people buying it. It never banned electric vehicles. It said we would tell our citizens and our businesses not to support electrification with the goal of ultimately banning electric vehicles in 2035. So even if this thing were to pass, and supposedly it has A bunch of support by the senators. I mean, Jim Anderson's a state senator is the one that initially proposed it. But then I read a bunch of other state senators said, yeah, we would support this to bring attention to what we're doing here. But one even said it's kind of tongue in cheek, but it's putting the point out there. So this isn't we're banning electric vehicles. This is just saying, in my opinion, look, guys, don't forget about us.
Right. Well, that's a great explanation, Tom. And thanks for that, because there's a lot of, you know, everything's so politicized and a lot of headlines out there making, you know, people getting angry and just like who don't understand the whole situation exactly. So that's a great explanation, I think. So I don't know. I think that brings us probably to the end of our show.
Oh, maybe Martin, I should just
come back. Whoa, hey. I was gone. I see you guys.
Like, okay, out of here.
Whoa.
I just want to bring up one topic on the Wyoming situation, which is I basically am the next town over from Wyoming. And, you know, it was the hot topic in the last week among my friends here because this is very close to our, obviously, town. I'm in Wyoming almost every day, actually, doing testing. But what's crazy is a lot of electric car owners in Wyoming, surprisingly, especially because the biggest city is just north of us. You know, you see Teslas all the time, Ioniq 5s, you name it, all with Wyoming plates. Tom's 100% correct in his assessment. EVs, this is the worst case for EVs going up Wyoming and north into Montana, over into North Dakota. Really rough. But And it just shows combustion is going to be around for a really long time. So I really think they have nothing to worry about. We're still going to need all of their exports for way too long. I think it's all going to work itself out.
Kyle, how far are you from Laramie?
Oh, like 30 minutes or so.
So I don't know Wyoming at all. I've never been there. I've never even looked at a map. But one of the emails that was particularly nasty that was telling me how they'd kill me and drag me in a truck if I drive over the state line and everything. You know, he didn't know where I was from and said, you're probably, you know, a Californian, but if you do live in Wyoming, he said, you know, you're probably one of those pig snouted liberal pussies from Laramie. So I guess is that a more liberal town?
It's a college town. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, yeah.
There's about three restaurants. I actually like Laramie quite a bit. Wyoming's got some. I mean, it might be actually my favorite state. One of my favorite states. It's a really wonderful place.
Yeah, Montana's right there. They're both pretty happy.
And to this guy, whatever town he lives in, is really nice.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have high thoughts on Laramie. If I was a Wyoming, I had to be from Laramie. You know, I couldn't be a real Wyoming. You know,
that adds up. Yes, Southern Wyoming isn't really, you know, going up.
Okay.
I got to say, you're not going to scare Tom on email. I mean, there's some people that are going to be bothered by things like that, but I'm not sure of all the people. You're not going to lose much sleep over this, are you? You're not going to be too nasty.
No.
Hey.
No,
it was pretty funny. And the one that was the worst that I'm talking about now that was really like, I mean, like I said, I could actually send this to the FBI. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
His email address was... Liz Cheney is a traitor at yahoo.com. So if anybody wants to send this guy his emails, Liz Cheney is a traitor at yahoo.com.
I love it. I must admit, look, as an observer, a keen observer of American politics, I mean, I love watching it, but holy moly, I'd hate to be there amongst the cut and thrust of it at times because it's fascinating to watch from a distance.
Yeah.
But I think I would upset everyone. I'm far too purple for everybody. I'm quite conservative, I'm quite liberal in places, and also quite fiscally conservative. But also, I think leave me alone. People let people do what they want in their life. So everybody in America would hate me because they're like, pick a side. I'm like, come on, I'm on no one's side.
I don't know how anybody could read, if you read that article, come across and be angry with me because I thought I was just... really explaining, look, there's a problem here. You know, it's not, you know, I didn't talk down to Wyoming people or Republicans. It was just very like, look, you know, it's an oil and gas state. And everybody sees the way this is going, guys. And in 10 to 15 years, their economy is going to have difficulty because of this when there's less cars. So they need to figure this out. And, you know, but I don't even know how many emails I got. It was crazy. Yeah. I stopped reading them.
There's some angry people out there. Just not, you know, just we're just angry, not even at this. It's just, I don't know, life has treated them a bad hand, dealt them a bad hand, and they're just lashing out. But,
Martin,
you know.
Martin, the one thing is when you actually live here and spend time here, this is not, at least for me, very much typical conversation. So we all live very normally. We just don't, maybe our news channels don't make it look that way. And then Tom, don't drive an electric car across Wyoming and stop at a charger. You just don't know who you're going to run into. Make sure you blast across in something combustion powered and get out as soon as possible.
I can hang out at that one, that college town that you talked about. They'll
Laramie.
Pig snouted liberal pussies.
Well, yeah, now listen, before we go, I wanted to ask everyone watching and listening and in the comments for some feedback, because I just had a fifth anniversary of my podcast, but come early April will be our third anniversary here with us four guys, and you in the audience have been doing this. I can't believe we haven't missed one, but individually we might have missed the odd show, but I think it'd be so cool, if not then, to do a live podcast at some point. And I know I'm absolutely desperate to get on a plane again. It's been so long. My question is, where could we do this? Like, is the answer Colorado, Fort Collins? Yes,
just all come to the hub.
Because then we can have the Twizzy there and all of the stuff. Or is it somewhere else? I'd love to know, like, if we did that, because we're about 11 or 12 weeks away from the anniversary of this podcast. And that is going to fly by if we want to do it in person. We've all got busy schedules. So maybe it won't be that, but I would love to
come here. I want to see Martin driving electric pickup trucks.
Yes. Yeah. Which I've never done. So, I come and do a tour, and do three.
Yeah, take the Model 3 and drive it everywhere.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think we should do something. And I'd love to do it with a live audience as well. It hasn't got to be Top Gear in a hangar with thousands of people. It could be,
You mean like hanging out with like live people in the same room with us?
Yeah, I think it'd be so cool to try and get, at some point this year, if it's not on the anniversary, get everyone together. So if anyone in the comments or the live chat has any suggestions, venues, ideas, how could we do it? Sponsors, because we'd want to, bring everyone together, then let me know. And that's something I can work on. It may or may not happen, but I'd love that.
I'd just like to say we're right in the middle of the country, so it's very easy for
everyone. Good point.
Yeah, so you guys, we can get a whole bunch of review cars in. We can have you guys come in and then, do a whole thing. Yeah.
That's a good point. You didn't do the thing a couple of years ago. You did that in LA, but it was a great event. You brought all these YouTubers in to drive all these different cars.
Yeah, it was great. We didn't get one video out of it.
Right. But I mean,
worked your ass off to organize it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
New York Auto Show. I didn't know that. In April. Samuel says.
I mean, that's not the worst idea.
I'm 50 miles from there.
Rub it in, Tom. All right. Leave your comments down in the comment section here about that. So I think that brings us to the end of our show now. Yeah, we're right up into the weeds here. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. And if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. And Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic on post.news, which will be open to the public next week at a beta. So click subscribe here and tap that bell icon for notifications. And thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao. Thank you.